Hello, and welcome to Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop roleplay games where I interview creators about their games, their inspirations, and their theory, process, and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, a game design enthusiast, roleplaying game editor, indie hustler slash promoter, and now apparently also an interview podcaster. You can find me on Twitter at IamFofos and on itch.io at blue-golan-games.itch.io. As part of Kickstarter Zine Quest 2, all this month I'm interviewing game designers who are running Kickstarter campaigns to get their games into print. Today our Zine Quester is Matt Bonhoff, a game designer and artist in the American Southwest. You can mostly find his work through Wasteland of Enchantment Games. Matt also helps to organise New Mexicon, which is a small indie RPG convention in New Mexico. His game for Zine Quest is Campfire Memories, a GM-less one-shot game telling stories of terrible family camping trips and why the characters still cherish the memories of those unpleasant experiences. Folks, I edited this game and I have to tell you, it's very good and most definitely very wholesome. Please go and check it out on Kickstarter and help to make a lovingly hand-printed zine of this game a reality. Now all of that's out of my head and into yours, let's talk indie game design. Hello, Matt, and welcome to Yes Indeed Pod.
Hello, I'm Matt Bonhoff, and I'm here.
So, hello, Matt. Why don't you tell a little something about yourself and the things that you do in indie tabletop role-playing games?
So, I'm like so many people in the hobby, probably too many people. I am a white cis male person. I'm in my early middle age. I've been playing games, RPGs since high school. I think D&D 2nd edition was my introduction to the hobby. And I've moved on from that, and I'm really interested in these smaller story games. I tend to do light games, like not really heavy in the drama or sorrow or heartbreak, and very short, easy experiences that I publish through, I don't know if company is the right term, but Wasteland of Enchantment is the name that I use, which is a reference to my home state, New Mexico, here in the U.S., which is the land of enchantment. And I've modified it to the wasteland because, you know, it's a big barren desert, so that just makes sense.
I understand you also helped to organize New Mexico Con.
Right, New Mexicon.
New Mexicon, that's why I couldn't remember the name. I had a friend who attended last year and told me it was the best con he'd been to.
Oh, really? It's one of the great things about New Mexicon is that it's a very small con. Like, we have peaked at about 100 attendees.
Oh, I wish I could go. That sounds amazing.
I get to know pretty much everybody who goes. It's like, to some degree or another, I shake their hand or I say hi or I play a game with them.
Oh, fantastic. Matt, you're in a campaign in Kickstarter, which started yesterday at the time that this goes out.
Yes, yeah, it will have started yesterday when this goes out.
And that's running for a couple of weeks until the 16th, Sunday the 16th. So
12 days, yeah.
Wow. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your game, Campfire Memories?
Yes, so Campfire Memories is a game that came to me last summer when I was on a road trip with my family. And we were driving down through Texas to the border of Louisiana, and we were camping on a beach, and things went wrong. Like, I think it culminated when we were on that beach and the tail end of a tropical storm came through in the middle of the night that was, you know, totally unpredicted and just flattened our tent. And so the rainfly is leaking and there's thunder and lightning and the poles are flattened and we're just huddled together in the middle of the tent, just trying to hold things up for like 4 hours until there was enough of a break in the storm that we could run to the car and flee to, I think it was Denny's that we ended up going to.
All amazing stories end at Denny's, yeah.
It's true. There's just something really cool about camping and the way things go horribly wrong and it's miserable and you hate it in the moment. And then afterwards, I find that I look back on these experiences as moments of personal growth or bonding and relationship growth with the people I'm with. And they become really treasured special experiences in these stories that I like to tell with other people. And so that's what this game is all about, is recreating those situations at a tabletop.
I can definitely relate to that, having been camping with my family last year. And yeah, at the time, it seems like a kind of stressful and slightly hellish experience. And then as soon as you go away, it seems all, oh, rose-tinted and, you know, what lovely nostalgic memories that we made while we were there. So
yeah,
I can certainly relate to that. I think a lot of parenting is like that, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
I should point out that I edited this game and I love it. I think it's amazing. And it's definitely the kind of game I can see playing with my family, who I have a couple of kids. I think in a few years' time, I'll be able to play this kind of game with them. And that's really nice to see role-playing games that are accessible to young families as well as to older adults.
Yeah, my daughter is 7 and we are playing it once a week at dinner time. Right now, we're in the middle of a game of it. She really enjoys being the dog because the dog creates all sorts of mischief and is just, you know, a constant pain, which is so much fun for her.
That definitely sounds like one of my kids. Yeah. That's really wholesome. I'd love to be able to play role-playing games at the table. That's lovely. So normally I ask questions about the setting, but this is a real world set game. So the setting is what you make of it. You can set it on a beach at the tail end of a tropical storm, or you could set it in a desert, which I think is one of your suggested settings. I really like that. It makes it a very dynamic game that has a lot of replayability, because you know, you can go on a camping holiday every year and you can go somewhere different, or you can go to the same place and have a different experience. So
yeah. That is actually really important to me, the mundanity of the setting. I think it makes it very accessible and everybody comes in. And I know it's not for everybody, because some people are looking for a level of escapism in their games where they want to go off to a fantasy world and they want to be, you know, powerful or whatever. And that's not what this is about. And I think I first encountered this kind of really mundane game through 14 Days. I don't know if you've played that one, but that's a game about dealing with chronic migraines.
Yeah, 14 Days, I've heard it played on a number of different podcasts, and my first published role-playing game, A Loud Noise in a Quiet Place, is very loosely based on the themes of 14 Days.
Oh, really?
That's cool.
It's not a commercial success, but it is an interesting game. It focuses on temporary hearing loss, which is something that I experience from time to time, and it focuses on how that affects people around you.
It's really rare. Like, there's not a whole lot of games that take place in a real world without, you know, werewolves. No. or some undercurrent of magic.
Not at all. But if you start looking at the indie scene, especially on itch.io, you find a lot of these games where people are talking about memory and emotion and trauma and turning day-to-day things into ritual and role-playing game. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of catharsis in turning your experiences into a game format, because it makes you more introspective about what the world around you is like and how that relates to play and to mechanics. And I think it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I'm tempted to take this and spin it off and talk about all these other games that I'm excited about from other people.
Well, you've mentioned 14 Days in terms of an inspiration to mundane setting. I mean, are there any other inspirations for Campfire Memories in particular?
Oh, I have a list of them. It has a lot of influence mechanically from Apocalypse World and those other games like that. I like that.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Of success. And I think that's super important. I also drew from some of Hannah's games in the setup, the way people claim different things. You establish your space, that everybody has a voice in the game. That was super important to me.
Yeah, that's from Questlandia, isn't it? And
Noirlandia
as well. Yeah, those are fairly strong themes through the game, that you have this this way of setting up a setting that people take ownership of. And that's you have different kinds of resources in your game, as well as different kinds of characters. Is there a reason that you chose to make the kinds of characters mechanically separate, or did you want to sort of emulate the class system perhaps in a traditional RPG?
So that one goes back to another influence that I totally forgot about, and that one's Campfire Memory started its life as a Lasers and Feelings hack.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. A lot of my games start as Lasers and Feelings hack, just because it's such a simple platform.
A lot of games in general at the moment are starting as Lasers and Feelings hacks. It's a very popular, it's a very easy format to get to grips with. So it's a really good basis for a lot of games.
So the two resort with the stats, we're going to be going from on a scale from wonder to skills, because I think there's a very different way that adults approach a wild setting than children do. And I wanted to kind of capture some of that. And then I added in gear as another consumable resource. And then that ended up changing to the three resources in the game of of gear skills and wonder that kind of differentiate the different kinds of characters.
I really like that differentiation of resources there, and how they work in play is, I think it's very interesting how they all work differently and that they can be used to represent different elements of the story to get through the same problem. I think that's very interesting, and it allows people to build on this idea of mixing narrative and mechanics, but making choices between the two. That's a very strong thing that indie is able to do.
Yeah, I think that goes back to something that's becoming a bit of a, I don't know, a signature in my game design. I've noticed it in a couple of games, is I try really hard to make the mechanics fun to play as a game, like by themselves. If you stripped away all the story, you'd still have a little bit of a core of a game. That shines out more in The Mice Men of Meyerwald, which was one of my last games, than it does in this one. But there has to be a certain level of mechanical complexity to make it kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think that's right. And if you can, I don't know, sometimes when I start writing a game, I just piggyback on existing game mechanics. So like I'll choose a card game that I think is fun or has a lot of strategy components and then try and attach a game to that. I mean, I guess this goes back to, I don't know, a really long time ago when people were just making role-playing games around chess or making role-playing games that fitted around war games or something, which I guess is how Dungeons & Dragons started. So.
Yeah,
it's interesting that you can make a system that is not independent of story, but is still exciting to play, as you said, once you've stripped all the story out. That's really cool. Actually, I'm impressed by that, and I see how that works now. Yeah,
well, that's the goal. I don't know if I always hit it, but that's what I'd like to happen.
I think you've hit it with Campfire Memories. The three different kinds of characters that you put in the game are adults, children, and the last kind of character, the dog, I think is. Now, it's just an inspired choice, you know. I really like that. It's very simple. I'm satisfied that your daughter likes playing as that character. That's interesting. When I first read through it, I was thinking, oh, this is a great character type for a child because they don't have to do a lot of narrative and they don't have to do a lot of exposition. But then it's a lot of describing what they're doing rather than what they're saying. So maybe there's a choice there as to whether it's easy or hard. I'm not sure which one you think it is.
Yeah, I think it's very approachable. It's easy because dogs are fun and they can just kind of do whatever they need to do and they don't have to pay a whole lot of attention to what the other characters are involved in. But then there's another level to it. You can kind of step it up where you're really trying to tie yourself into the other stories and really be integral components. And building those relationships as the dog can be really, really challenging because you can't talk. You're not, you know, a blood relative of anybody else. Yeah, it's a very different way of playing. So I think it's one of those things where it's easier to get into maybe than the other characters, but a lot more difficult to really master. I'm putting air quotes around that, but nobody can see that because this is, you know, an audio media.
What I like about the character types is like that the different level of wonder that they have. I think that's a very evocative way of describing adults and children and small animals as well. Like children have a lot of wonder but not much skill. Adults have a lot of skill but perhaps not much wonder. And dogs have I can't remember what the dog has. Is it a lot of wonder?
A lot of wonder and like one skill, I believe.
One skill, yeah. So actually, in this game, kind of the children, the most balanced characters, I seem to remember, which is that's kind of empowering for kids who wanted to play characters their own age.
Especially because gear ends up being a communal pool that everybody can pull from. It does kind of incentivize people to consider at least playing as a child, which is important to me.
I really appreciate that. I think it's a good game design choice, actually. All the character types are quite well balanced, which gives you, as you said, an incentive to choose any of those character types. And you can choose them based on what story you want to tell rather than being a power gamer and, you know, having mechanically ultimate character, which is definitely not what this is about. You can't win at a story game. So your game sort of focuses on episodes through a camping trip where you are exposed to a problem or an issue or a threat and you work together or you work individually to get through that and pulling on your resources. And you have a dice mechanic, which is very straightforward and easy to use. And it doesn't really matter whether you succeed or fail. You can get injured. That's a thing that can happen to you. But I don't recall that having any mechanical disbenefit. So
no, it doesn't.
That's, you know, that's very accessible for children as well, which is another great selling point for your game, really. And then at the end, you have this epilogue where you talk about the memories of this camping trip.
Yeah.
Do you want to go through that a little bit? Because I think it's a really good twist on how this game works.
Absolutely. I'd love to. In fact, it's my favorite part of the game.
Yeah, that really shows when you read through it that, you know, a lot of thought went into this, and it's really well written, and it's a nice setup. So yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So you know, all stories need different story beats. It needs to be varied in some way. You go through your high points and your low points, or your action-y points and then your subtle sneaky points, or whatever story beats are important to the story. And I think for these kinds of stories, the important shift goes between the hilarity, the humor of the camping phase, where things are going wrong and people are bumbling through, and it's kind of one of those awkward things that is fun to watch. And then it shifts to a sentimental, nostalgic, it's a very sincere phase in the reflection phase, where players are taking turns grabbing the cards that represent the scenes from their camping trip and looking back on them years later. So we've had players, you know, playing as the dog, and they're now like graying around the muzzle and very old, but they think back to that time when they chased down a turkey in the forest, and their leg twitches as they're dreaming. Or the kid remembering when their dad fell into the river and was being swept away, and how they managed to last minute pull their dad out, and they felt empowered and mature. And being able to look back on the experience is just really special to me. I think it's also a fun way to kind of wrap things up and slow things down. It's kind of like the after game talk, but in game form.
I think that's a really powerful way to kind of debrief from a session, which I think there's a lot more games coming on stream now where you do have these epilogues and you do have these debrief sessions at the end of a game.
Yes.
Games like Dream Askew and Belonging and Outside Belonging games kind of have this baked in, where at the end of a game session, you kind of talk about how you feel and how the game made you move through your emotions, so that you don't potentially go away feeling like that something has upset you and you're kind of disturbed by it. So obviously with Campfire Memories, that's not the intention, but it is a trend in the industry that people are bringing in these kind of post-game safety tools as well as in-game safety tools. And I think that's really encouraging to see.
I like to think of it as more than just a safety tool, because there are times when you go through a really difficult, stressful, intense game, and you need it as a safety tool to kind of ease back into the real world. But even other games where maybe it wasn't super intense and you don't necessarily need, and again, I'm air quoting, that kind of debrief session, I think it's really good to take the time to look back and talk about what happened and what people enjoyed. And you know, as a GM, it helps you set up for the next time and figure out what people are interested in exploring. As a player, it gives you a chance to kind of unpack how you felt about it.
Yeah, I like it. I also like that part of the mechanic is that it doesn't actually have to have happened the way that you retell it. That's very true to our old memories. You know, we don't necessarily remember them faithfully. And I really like the idea that you're building in an unreliable narrator to the end of your story. Yeah, your nostalgic epilogue is very wholesome. I really like it. I think that's an excellent game design mechanic. So I may borrow heavily from that in the future. Yeah,
please do.
Is there anything else that you would like to talk about the design of the game?
Sure. So one thing that I'd like to get out there, and it's important to me when I'm talking about the game with anybody, is that when I say that it's about a family camping, I'm not in any way talking about just the nuclear family of, you know, mom, dad, and children. That kind of an idealized family exists to some degree, but it's not the only family. And it's important to me that family means a lot more than that, especially in this game, because I want everybody to be able to see themselves in it.
I think that comes across because you give some specific examples. That could be like a scout troop who go on a trip, or colleagues who go on a work trip. That has a lot of potential for a very different tone to a nuclear family or an extended family going on a camping trip. So it is really important that you've talked about these found families or these different sets of groups who could go out there together, and that people can reflect their own experience in the game.
Yes.
Another wholesome point. So, Matt, thank you for talking about Campfire Memories. Do you want to talk a little bit about yourself as a game designer?
Sure. Yeah. The desire to design games came to me pretty early in my experience with the hobby. I think there's a very natural progression from being a player to running a game to designing a game. To me, it's all kind of the same thing to different degrees.
They talk about this in internet content division, where they talk about 70%, 20%, and 10%. And there's 70% of people who are partaking in something. There's 20% who are hacking it. And then there's 10% who are going out there and creating it. And I think there is almost no hobby truer of that ratio than of role-playing games. You know, there's people who are just happy to go away and play the games. There's people who, you know, want to make their own homebrew content, maybe hack a game or something. And then there's people who are going out there and designing games. And I would say, yeah, probably is about a 10-to-1 ratio of people who are playing to people who are designing.
I could buy that.
So, sorry, go on.
Yeah, so yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with somebody who is happy just as a player and doesn't feel the need to do any more, dig any deeper into the hobby. But to me, role-playing games is an active rather than a passive hobby. You know, you're not just sitting down to watch a movie. You're not consuming media. You're producing the media as you're playing, and you produce a little bit more of it. You have a little bit more control if you're running the game, and then you have a little bit more control when you're writing your own. So
yeah,
to me, it was kind of a natural progression.
Yeah.
But just like my first attempts at GMing were absolutely awful. Those games fell flat. My first attempt at designing a game was pretty bad too. I just discovered Fudge online, and I was like, oh, cool, you get to make your own stats and stuff. And I made a game with like 60 stats, and it was unplayable.
Very crunchy. That's interesting, because I think the first time I tried to hack a game, it was a Fudge hack. So,
yeah.
I mean, it must have been after Fate came out, but I think I just went, oh, Fate, that sounds way too cool. I'm just going to try this game that nobody played. I like Fudge, though. It's a great system.
Yeah, I've never actually played it, which is probably another reason why I had a really tough time designing it.
I designed a setting for it and took it to a role-playing group at university and tried to get them interested. And they were like, no, this doesn't work. Let's play Dungeons & Dragons. So it was unsuccessful. I think that was my first attempt at game design. And I think I'm pretty glad to say that that didn't work out, actually, because it meant I could go away and get some proper experience before I tried to try to hack.
I think the message that I want to get across when I'm talking about my experience as a game designer is that it takes experience, it takes work, but I think anybody can do it. This is just something you got to decide to do, and then you do it. And yeah, your first games are going to be terrible, but you keep pushing past it, and you get beyond that. So much of my growth as a game designer is less about like growing skill or being good at game design, and it's more about believing that I can do it. Like every little step is, you know, you make the game and you're super nervous about it, and then you run for it, and they actually had a good time. And then you think about putting it online, and that's terrifying because strangers are going to see it. And then you put it out there and you realize that it's once again fine. Maybe a few people download it, probably not a whole lot of people are even going to know about it. And it keeps going like that. Now I'm at the point where I have this game on Kickstarter, and I'm still relearning this same lesson that I'm doing okay. And if I want this and I trust myself to put it out there, then it's going to be fine. And all of these insecurities and nervousnesses that I have about putting this out into the public, about asking people to support it, about thinking that my game deserves to be something that is paid for a little bit, you know, that's all an internal struggle, not something that other people are really, you know, nobody's called me out as a fake yet.
I think that feeling of imposter syndrome is very strong in the indie design space. And having a message like that, I think I would just play that every time I want to write a game. it's a very strong message to send to people who are maybe embarking on their first game design mission, or maybe about to publish a game, maybe about to put it on Kickstarter, and just to say, hey, we're all here, you know, we all love promoting other indie stuff. We all love to talk about this. So don't be shy. There's no need for it. You know,
yeah.
We're all here. Like, I don't sell many games, and
Oh, me neither.
I'm happy with that, you know. I mean, my biggest seller so far has been as part of a collective, but even going it alone, that's great, because
yeah,
you get to do everything exactly as you want to do it, and that's really fun too. I think if we both have just one message to everybody out there, it's just do it, please.
Yeah, yeah. And people will support you in it. Like, not necessarily monetarily. As you said, you don't make any money off it. I think in the past 3 years, I've made a grand total of like $50 off of my games, which is kind of laughable.
You're ahead of me. We're all here, you know, we spread the word, we retweet stuff, we talk on podcasts, I guess, and
yeah,
we get people to play our games on Twitch streams, and it's very exciting, and I love that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like an example of this is a couple days ago, I announced the Kickstarter at the time of the recording, and I put out the link on my Facebook and my Twitter and stuff, and I said, hey, if people would like to click the button to say that they want to be notified when this goes live, it would really mean something to me, because when 10 people click it, then it reports a number. And I was shocked that like an hour later, 10 people had clicked it. And over the past couple of days, it's been going up and up and up. And I mean, it's not huge. Last time I checked, it was at 23 people. But that still means that 23 people are interested in this enough to want to hear about it when it launches. And that's just so exciting.
Yeah, it reminds me, I should do that too. If I can give you a little ego boost next time I'm online, I'll try and remember to do that. Well, hopefully, you know, you'll have had plenty of people backing your game by now. You know, this will be the second day of your Kickstarter campaign when this goes out. So good luck to you. You know, I'm sure it's going to succeed, because ZineQuest is a very wholesome mission. It's very much part of my bag now. I'm very bought into this whole ZineQuest scene.
I agree. I like the small DIY nature of the whole project.
Absolutely. And are you going to be fulfilling all of this yourself? Are you going to be making zines?
It's all me. I'm going to go down the street to the Staples and have them run them off, and I'm going to fold them and staple them by hand.
That's amazing. Well, I will definitely be backing. In the UK, I don't think you'll be able to send a game to me, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing the final version of Campfire Memories.
In terms of seeing the final game and maybe being a little sad that I can't ship things overseas because I'm trying to keep it simple on myself, I don't have it listed on the Kickstarter's campaign page, but in the back of my head is this secret stretch goal that I want to announce halfway through the campaign, and now your listeners will be in on the secret, is I want to do full color art for the PDF. I can't do it for the zine because it's black and white, but
yeah.
That is something exciting to look forward to.
Yeah, okay. That makes me feel better. I would love to see the zine, but yeah, if I can get a full color PDF instead, then even better. So, Matt, I think that about brings us to time. So if you want to tell us where we can find you online and where we can find your Kickstarter campaign and for how long, then I'm sure we can direct all of our listeners to go and check it out immediately, because it's a very good game.
Great. Yeah. So I am on Twitter at, I believe it's Matt_Bonhoff. That's BOHNHOFF. I'm on Facebook. The best place to talk about my games is I have Wasteland of Enchantment Games as a group that people can join. You can get notified on all the latest stuff. And then also that Wasteland of Enchantment Games, you can find me on DriveThru or Itch or I think even Redbubble. I have some t-shirts up on there.
Oh, cool. If you just send me all those links, they will be in the show notes. So don't worry if you didn't catch them. And any other messages for our listeners while you're here?
No, I think we covered everything.
We really did.
I'm happy to come on again and talk about cons or other games or...
Oh, great. Next time you're running a Kickstarter campaign, we'll get you back on.
Sure.
Okay, well, that's great. Thank you very much for coming on. Yes, indeed. And I'll speak to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thanks again to Matt Bonhoff for the interview. You can find more about Matt on Twitter and more about Campfire Memories on Kickstarter. Every single Gorham link and social media handle will be in the episode description too. All of February is ZineQuest 2, a Kickstarter role-playing game event where loads of indie creators are running campaigns to get their games printed to zine format. It's an extravaganza of content and it's set to be a wild ride. To celebrate it, I'm doubling up on content and putting out an interview with a ZineQuester every single week. Next week, I'll be interviewing Eli Seitz, a game designer exploring tabletop, LARP, and the experimental space in between. His work can be found on Itch.io and in the upcoming Doikait Jewish TTRPG anthology. Eli is running two ZineQuest campaigns, Last Place on Earth, about the heroic age of exploration, and Fruit of Law, a freeform game about writing the rule of society by using and eating a pomegranate. And if that latter description isn't a summary of what indie games are doing at the moment, then I don't know what is. Another little plug for my friend, official influencer, Krista Reynolds. During February, you can sign up for the third Akashicon X Ninja Hell Productions Anime RPG Design Contest, which takes place over 3 months, and is open to all ages 13+. Find the details at the Akashicon website and at ninjahell.com/contest. If you enjoy Yes Indeed Pod, please subscribe wherever you find your podcasts, and of course reach out to me through Twitter at IamPhophos. That's IamPhophos. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is from BitQuest by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and filmmusic.io. Thanks, Kevin. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.